Merry Christmas, Mercy Hill Online. We are so excited that you are joining us for this Christmas service. Hey guys, many people across the triad have experienced Mercy Hill for the very first time at a Christmas service in years past. That may be your experience today. Hey, if that's you, we would love to know about your experience. You can text MH Church to 41411, or as always, you can get on our website right on the homepage. Let us know that you're new and that you're just checking out Mercy Hill. We have a gift that we would love to send you guys. Hey, the second thing that I want to do real fast before we dive into the Christmas sermon this week is I want to talk to you for just a minute about the new sermon series that we have coming up, right? I've been studying this book for months and getting ready January 7th and 10th. I want to personally invite you to come and hear some teaching from the book of Ecclesiastes, all right? The book of Ecclesiastes is so pertinent for our culture today, y'all. I don't know about you guys. I'll use this as an example. One of my favorite characters from Christmas is Frosty the Snowman. Frosty the Snowman is also one of the most nefarious and shady Christmas characters. You know what I'm talking about. Getting the kids, chasing them all around, taunting them that they're not as fast as him, encouraging tobacco use, intimidating people with a broomstick. You know what I'm talking about. Disobeying traffic cops. And then finally, in Terminator fashion, vowing at the end, I'll be back. So I don't know if you guys like Frosty or not, but one of the things that I think about with this series in Ecclesiastes, y'all, is that our culture has a little bit of a Frosty mentality, and that is Frosty knew the sun was hot that day, so he said, hey, let's run. We'll have some fun before I melt away. That is our culture in a lot of ways. Y'all, a lot of people believe, hey, man, I'm not sure what's in the afterlife. I'm not sure if there's a God. What I'm going to do is know that, man, I got a short time. The sun is hot. Eventually, I'm going to melt away. So I'm going to go for it. Well, in the book of Ecclesiastes, y'all, we end up seeing a guy who was a king who had it all. And he went all the way to the bottom of that kind of lifestyle. Man, if I want it, go after it. It was a king that had everything that the world could offer. And yet he shows us how empty that life is. I think it's going to be a great study. Hey, join us on the 7th and 10th. As we kick off that brand new sermon series, I wanted to personally invite you guys to that, all right? Hey, Psalm 95 is where we're going to spend just a few minutes today, and I want to talk to you about this big idea. God is worthy of our adoration. Maybe you have heard this before. Come, all ye faithful, come let us what? Come let us adore him, all right? Adoration, okay? To see something and realize, man, it is delightful, it is joyful to find our delight and joy in something. That is what it means. To adore, and God is the one that is, I almost don't want to say adorable, because we use that term differently, although it means to be something that it can be delighted in and joy in. We use it for puppies and outfits and kids. Okay, if my sons were to say to me, Dad, you're really adorable, I'd be like, you need to go to your room. Okay, you're in trouble. I mean, we don't use it that way, but the idea is that God is sort of the one that is worthy of our adoration, adorable. He is worthy of that. And we should bring our adoration to him. I know at Christmas time, man, a lot of our adoration gets spread between decorations, cookies, gifts, maybe good stuff like family or whatever. But what I want to push you guys to see today from Psalm 95, come let us adore him. Come let us worship him. That's what the word is going to be in Psalm 95. Our deepest adoration should be reserved for God, who is the rock of our joy, okay? Hey, we're going to walk through this psalm. Let me point out some practical things, and then we'll get to adoration at the end. Let's dive in. Okay, here, let me show you. Verse 1 in chapter 95. Oh, come, let us sing to the Lord. Let us make a joyful noise to the rock of our salvation. Let us come into his presence with thanksgiving. Let us make a joyful noise to him with songs of praise. Psalm 95, y'all, is a call to worship God, to sing, to make a joyful noise, to make a shout, because God is the rock of our salvation, the immovable part of our salvation, which inspires great joy in people when they understand that. Now, biblically speaking, this idea of salvation is very broad, okay, but generally it means to be saved from an enemy. Well, once you understand the whole Bible, you know that that enemy was sin. That enemy was death, ultimately, and Jesus Christ has come. Jesus, this time, we praise God at Christmas. Jesus came in a manger, but he ends up dying on a cross in order that we could be saved for our salvation. He was born in a cave, buried in a cave. Why? So that he could be the rock, the Bible calls him, the cornerstone. He could be the foundation of a saved people, all right? In our sin, we were separated from God, but Jesus Christ came to bring us back into the family of God again. And what Psalm 95 is saying, y'all, is remember that today. It's a call to worship. Remember the rock of our salvation. And when we remember, we will have a shout of praise. We will join him. We will make noise. We will praise God. Y'all, what we believe about the rock is revealed in the joyful noise that we make, okay? People sing over greatness. They sing over joy. They make sound when they see something that is great. You know, I think about this in our culture right now. Any game that you watch, football, basketball, soccer, whatever it is that you're watching, there's nobody in the crowd, but yet piping through your television is sort of a track of you know, people shouting, and when something happens on the field, you hear a shout go up in the crowd, but then you're like, man, there ain't no crowd. You know, what's the deal with that? Because it's kind of like, man, we know that even human greatness in an athletic field or a great speech or whatever, it should inspire some type of shout. It should inspire something that moves us. You know, I thought about this. I don't know if you guys saw this on social media or whatever. My man Trenton Brown, father of a kid that was playing basketball in Ohio, he's at the game, and they do the national anthem before the game, and people are there, and all of a sudden they realize, like, man, the music system is out. Like, nobody, you know, they can't hear the music, and the microphones are down, and everybody's just kind of standing around or whatever. And Trenton Brown, if you go look up the video, man, he steps up to the plate and absolutely belts it out. Just no mic, no sound system, just total talent and emotion, and sings the national anthem, leaves everybody speechless, and then just sits down and gets back to his Mountain Dew in one hand and popcorn in the other. And it was just kind of a cool moment. Hey, my point is this: athletic, people shout. Man, people sing for countries. Listen, there's so many things in this life that we make noise over. We sing for countries. We sing for love. Y'all, we sing for the life that we lead and the way that we lead our life in terms of lifestyle. People make songs about those things. They shout at games. We were built to shout. We were built to sing. Don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying these other things are wrong that we sing for or whatever. Not at all. What I'm saying is they're not the ultimate end. We ultimately are not made to sing for spouses or for sports or for countries or any of that stuff. Y'all, ultimately, it's about the rock of our salvation. It's about how great God has been to us and who he is. Look what it says in verse 3. For the Lord is great and a great king above all gods. In his hand are the depths of the earth. The heights of the mountains are his also. The sea is his, for he made it, and his hands formed the dry land. You know, every year at the end of the year, I go through a biblical counseling regimen for 5 or 6 weeks just to kind of fill my soul. And this past week, we were talking about Ephesians 1, where Paul is trying to convince the church at Ephesus that God is over every ruler and authority and power and king and all of that. And I see so much of what Paul was telling the Ephesian church right here in the book of Psalms. Man, that is what the psalmist is trying to say, that God is the ruler, okay? That if it is, it is his. We adore him because he is over it all. Think about an ancient people. An ancient people, they would celebrate gods that had a sphere of influence or whatever. I want you to think about what the psalmist is saying here. What he's saying is, for an ancient people, what is more powerful than the sea? What is more looming than the mountains? And what the Bible is saying here is, oh yeah, he made it. Just almost nonchalant, oh yeah, he made it. It's his. He made it. I love that song we teach our kids. Our God is so big. Maybe some of you sang that as a kid. The mountains are his. The rivers are his. The skies are his handiwork too. So, oh, come, let us worship and bow down. Let us kneel before the Lord our maker, for he is our God, and we are the people of his pasture and the sheep of his hand. Today, if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts. Y'all, this passage begins with worship. It ends in a warning. I want to move all the way through this, okay? We're still talking about worship here. Oh, come all ye faithful. You guys have heard that song. We're actually going to end up doing it here in just a minute, but it is just this idea. It is just this call that the faithful would bring their adoration, evidence in their worship, evidence in their humility, their exuberance, their ability to bow. It's a shout of praise, and then it's a bowing to the earth, realizing I can never get low enough to show my gratitude and my homage to the King. I'm excited for his coming, and I also understand that he is great, and not only those things, but y'all, that he is also ours. He is not just maker, he's Lord. He is also the shepherd. We are sheep from his pasture is what this says. Now, listen, I don't have sheep, okay? But I do have a couple of cows. And I've told you before, named Bonnie and Berg. Berg's named for hamburger, okay? Which I tell Berg all the time. I say, bud, what's in a name anyway, right? Okay, but Bonnie and Berg. And the thing is, listen, I don't have sheep, but I am kind of the one that's over them. They come running when they hear me call. They know that I've got a little snack for them. They know that I'm going to move their fence so that they can get to clean pasture. They know that when I come, there is something that is me kind of caretaking for them. And what the Bible says unbelievably is that the God not only who speaks into existence, the God not only who has been over the seas and the dry land and the mountains and all of these things, he's not just the maker, he's not just the King, but he's also the shepherd. Revelation chapter 7, he is the shepherd as well as the lamb. He is no hired hand, in other words, that runs away from our sins and situations, but he cares for us deeply and he is guiding us ever to a glorious conclusion in heaven. And for that reason, we worship. Listen to the warning. For that reason, we do not harden our hearts against him today, okay? Hey, with the remainder of my time, let me try to chase this idea down. In terms of the big idea, man, our adoration is reserved for God. He is worthy. Here's the application for tonight. Adore God above all this Christmas, okay? Man, we adore gifts and we adore trees. We adore presents, eggnog, movies, decorations, lights, cookies, Amazon delivery people, FedEx. Okay, we also adore, you know, the big things, man. Family, time off, rest. Okay, altruism this time of year. I'm not saying any of these things are wrong or bad. There are actually many of them good and good gifts, but I want to call you today, this Christmas, to bring your adoration, to reserve your deepest praise, your deepest worship and allegiance for the God who is worthy, okay? I've mentioned this in the series already, and if you're new with us today, let me just mention it again. Y'all, we are built for this. We are built to praise. We are built to adore, and if we don't adore God, we will adore other things that are smaller. We will adore smaller things that are not worthy. When we don't adore God, it doesn't mean that we don't adore. When we don't worship, it doesn't mean that we don't worship. Okay, we don't worship God, it doesn't mean that we don't worship. It means that our hearts will be set on an endless search to go and find something else that we will hold to be valuable, to pursue with our life, to end up saying, man, this is going to be my joy. This is going to be my satisfaction. This is going to be my salvation in a sense. When it isn't God, it'll be something else that we put our trust in ultimately, that we look to for deep joy, that we lean on for security. You guys know this maybe if you've been around ever at a Mercy Hill Christmas, because I share it just about every year. But one of my favorite Christmas illustrations, okay, is one of the churches that we planted early on at Mercy Hill, Mercy Church over in Charlotte. Their pastor there, he had a blog post about his son. They had a nativity scene. And the nativity scene set up and all that. And then all of a sudden they realize one day, his son's 5 or 6 years old. All of a sudden they realize that Doc Hudson from the movie Cars has joined the party, okay? You can see that here, he's joined the party. And now he's up there, he's with the shepherds or whatever, he's kind of observing Jesus and he's just kind of got in there and he's looking around, he's kind of part of the deal now. Well, then the next day they walk out and it's so funny because Doc Hudson has not just kind of joined the party, but now Doc Hudson has just totally replaced Jesus. And now Doc Hudson is in the manger. Man, I thought that the imagery of that is so good. And the reason the imagery of that is so good, because it's a perfect picture. All we are is kids that grow up and learn how to hide things better. Y'all, it is the imagery that we can take what we are built to adore, what we're built to worship, what is ultimately supposed to be that thing that satisfies those deep places in us for security and identity and trust and deep joy and all of that. And we can end up replacing who it's built for, God, the King, Jesus, okay, was something else entirely. I want to tell you today that he is worthy, but if we are not careful, we will end up pursuing other things. You think about relationships. You think about, our health. Hey, 2020, okay? Think about the way we've thought about health. You think about money. You think about a promotion at work or whatever it is. These things are good things, but when we turn them into God things, they will end up kind of failing us, and they will end up proving themselves not to be worthy of our deepest adoration, maybe even success. Maybe some of you guys are looking at 2021 and I say, man, what are you pursuing with your life? What is that object that if I just looked in from the outside, I would say that's where your deepest adoration, your worship even, is going? And you might say, man, it's success. You know what's crazy? These things will always fail us because at the end of every milestone, there's a horizon, there's another milestone that pops up that you got to keep chasing. These things will fail us. They will not satisfy. You know, thinking about success, I thought about that. You know, Mercy Hill, we have been so blessed. And I remember early on, you know, our Mercy Hill Church was planted in 2012. And man, our second birthday, we broke 1,000 in attendance. And I will never forget it as long as I live. But you know what? There was something that came with that. Because I remember kind of a sneaking feeling the next day where I thought, man, we just hit this big milestone 2 years in. What's the next milestone? What's the one after that? If my identity, if my security, if the thing I'm chasing the most in my life, this is just my world, okay? You can fill in the blank for your world, is success in my given vocation or whatever it is, there will always be another milestone. I remember thinking to myself, brother, if you can't be satisfied with what God's doing in your life when your church is 100, you'll never be at 1,000, you'll never be at 10,000. I don't know how that hits you in your world, just being honest with you about mine. All right, but whether it's health, all right, one day, this life or the next, it'll fail. Whether it's relationships, one day in this life or death will end up parting you. If it's success, there's always another milestone on the horizon. If we are looking for anything or to anything with our deep adoration, all right, if we're looking to something on this earth to give us an identity and success, you know, security and all of those things, y'all, eventually it will fail us. And when it does, it will have proven itself not to be worthy of our deep adoration and our praise and even our worship, all right? So what I want to call you to do, I want to talk to those of you who maybe aren't quite believers yet. I want to talk to those of you who are, and then we'll be done. All right. The first thing I would say is this. Hey, if you're not a believer, you're just checking things out. Maybe you stopped by, you saw this online or you saw this, you know, you stopped by our services in person. Listen, what is that thing in your life that gets your highest praise and adoration? If it's not God, what is it? You know, because this is what I would say, we've been using this illustration throughout the whole series. But here's the thing. Your deepest adoration is supposed to produce in you your deepest joy. What you end up adoring the most. You know, we say it like this. God is most glorified in us when we are most satisfied in him. When God is that thing that we set our adoration, our worship, our praise on, then what ends up happening in our life is that we end up with a deep wellspring of joy that will not be fleeting. It actually will go on into eternity. Y'all, we've been using this idea of a fire through a television. And here's what I would say. Adoring something that is not God deeply and most ultimately ends up being a fire through a television. Your adoration of something else, success, a relationship, whatever it is, it will never get you to the deep, eternal, lasting joy. This is what I would tell you today. Those things, that deep, lasting, eternal kind of joy and security and even identity, those things are only given by the divine. And if you're looking to a hobby or your kid's school situation or you're looking to something else to come up in your life to give you that, y'all, it's never going to actually deliver. You're going to adore it, but then at the end of the day, it's not going to deliver that deep joy that is supposed to come with our deepest adoration given over. Instead, it's not going to keep you warm. It's going to be like a fire through a television. It's going to promise some things. It's going to look right. It's going to even smell right. It's even, it won't smell right. It'll even sound right, I meant. It'll kind of make you have a feeling, but at the end of the day, it's just not going to keep you warm, all right? The answer today is to come and adore the one who, dare I say, is adorable, okay? Maybe not the way we use it, but is actually worthy of our delight in him, is worthy of our praise, and I pray that you will come today. The way you do that is you confess your sin. Man, you understand you're separated from God. You believe Jesus Christ didn't just come in a manger, but he died on a cross, and he did so for your sins. I'm going to tell you today, don't harden your heart. That's what the Bible said. Look at verse 7 and 8 again. Today, if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts. I mentioned this earlier. Y'all, this psalm is about worship. It begins in worship, but it ends in a warning. The God of the Bible speaks. My question for you is, are you listening? I don't have time to chase down the rest of Psalm 95, okay? But here's the deal. Psalm 95, the rest of the psalm, brings back to memory two stories from the Old Testament to make one point. It brings back a story from Exodus 17, another story from Numbers chapter 14, where the people of God basically just didn't trust God. They didn't trust God. They complained against Moses. They didn't trust God. They didn't want to listen to the good spies, and they ended up not wanting to go into the promised land. They heard God's voice, but they hardened their heart against him. And when they did, as they hardened their heart, it became harder and harder for them to hear. And eventually, the reality is that generation never entered into God's rest. You know, if you're not a believer and you're coming in and you're hearing this today, hey, if you are hearing the voice of God, listen, if God is speaking to you through his word, if the Spirit is convicting you, man, if all the circumstances of 2020, okay, have begun to move you into this mode of being open and willing to listen, do not harden your heart, because as you harden your heart, it becomes harder and harder to hear. I don't know if you remember C.S. Lewis in The Magician's Nephew. Uncle Andrew, okay, was the character. And Aslan, you know, is the God character in the Chronicles of Narnia. And Uncle Andrew, he refused to believe that Aslan was God and that Aslan could actually speak. He just wanted to see him as a lion. And here's the deal. When he refused to see Aslan for who he was, every time Aslan spoke, all he heard was a roar, because he wouldn't believe who he was. Every time he spoke, all he heard was a roar. And it got harder and harder and harder for him to hear. If you are hearing from God today, if you are hearing from him this very week, do not harden your heart against him. I heard a story about a man. When I was a young man, I heard this story about a man who was at an evangelistic crusade, and the Spirit of God was drawing him deeply. And he got up to go to the front of the stage. And when he went up to the front of the stage, he realized that there was he could go this way to the stage, or he could go this way out to the parking lot. It was kind of a fork in the road. And he ends up deciding, you know, man, I feel like God's calling me, but I'm just going to go out to my car, and man, I'm going to think about this a little more, and I don't have to do this today. And y'all, he said, man, the Spirit of God never drew me that way again the rest of my life. He hardened his heart, and he wasn't able to hear. I would call you today, man, open your heart if he is calling you today. Hey, and believers, all right, hey, two quick hitters and we're done, okay? Man, the first thing I would say is this: let us make sure that we adore Christ in our hearts and our homes this Christmas. That is what Psalm 95 is about. Man, come all you faithful, come let us adore him, let us worship him. It is this idea of he has come, so let us save our deepest adoration and our joy over what God has done. Let us save our adoration for the God of the universe, all right? And listen, I'm not saying don't have fun with all the Christmassy stuff, okay? I know my family, we certainly do. I'm not saying don't open gifts with your kids, but don't open them gifts without talking about the true gift, okay? I'm not saying that we, you know, shouldn't be generous and think about, you know, what ways that we can impact our community, and we should. A lot of times, even non-believers talk about those things at the end of the year, but let us not go and do before we realize, wait a minute, how generous was he to me? What has he done in giving us his son? Oh, come all ye faithful, come let us adore him. Secondly and finally, I would say this to the believers here today. You know, a lot of people have looked at this psalm through history, and what they have said about this psalm is that many people think Psalm 95 is actually two psalms, that it should be split kind of right in half. They think somebody came in later and kind of smashed these psalms together, because they say, well, one of them is about worship and one of them is about, and the other one's about a warning. It's almost like, man, if you worship God, and then it's about what happens when you don't obey. I would say today, I think that is unequivocally false. This is one psalm for this reason. Is there not a connection between adoration and obedience, between worship and walking in God's commands? Y'all, as we end 2020, been a crazy year, all right? As we end 2020, man, can we just stop and can we think, because the King has come, because he is worthy of our deep joy, our deep adoration, our deep praise, All right, what things should we hear the voice of God in and obey more faithfully this next year? Make it not just a Christmas thing, but make it a culture thing in our homes and in our lives. All right. Hey, guys, Merry Christmas. It has been so great to get a chance to preach for you today. I'm grateful for that opportunity. Hey, we're going to go into an awesome song. I bet you know which one. Oh, Come All You Faithful.